Welcome to Valley Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by KVRF in the studios of Radio Free Palmer. The moderator of Valley Edition is Mike Molesky.
Welcome, folks, to the second edition of Valley Edition. It's November 9th, 2012. The election has passed. It was Tuesday. The results are mainly in, with a few changes perhaps to come as the final votes are counted. And we have today Terry Snyder, who was here last week, the citizen lobbyist. We have Zaz Hollander, who is an independent journalist. And of course, we have sitting between them Andrew Wellner. Mark Kelsey was called away to the great state of Minnesota, and he'll be back with us, but Andrew has graciously agreed to be here. So we're going to kick off this week with a very simple question. After the years and all the dollars spent and everything else, and let's start with the national level, where, by the way, in the state of Alaska, my understanding is we're not going to quite reach 60% of the registered voters voting this year. It's going to be in the high 50s maybe, but that's where it is. So let's take a look and say, what does what are the implications of this national election results for the Valley? Zaz, do you have anything you want to start out with?
Well, I think that to start with, the turnout numbers aren't necessarily, I think they're very disappointing, but I don't think they're surprising given the kind of overall, preordained. I think most people knew what was going to happen in Alaska. I think it's pretty obvious what was going to happen on the national level. I didn't see any Obama signs. I didn't see any Romney signs anywhere in any yards. And 4 years ago, there, because of Sarah Palin's involvement, there were a lot of signs out. In terms of the ramifications of the election, we talked about this a little bit last week. I think that in terms of resources, you know, the biggest concern that you hear is NPRA, the Obama administration on oil and gas, but it was also the Obama administration that opened up the Outer Continental Shelf and authorized shale drilling. And, you know, the issues that shale is having this summer, was having in the Arctic, were of the Arctic's doing. I mean, they were, it's a really tough place to work up there. And this is the first time that anybody has had this kind of concerted drilling effort. I don't know that there will be that big a difference, honestly, with an Obama administration.
Okay, given that there has been an Obama administration mm-hmm. for a number of years. Andrew, you want to throw in here?
Yeah, I think I'm with Zaz on that one. I don't think there's going to be major changes. The Daily News ran a piece today, I think, and their thesis was that, you know, is this going to mean that we have to get along better, that the state is going to have to stop being so contentious when it comes to the federal government? And I don't see Parnell toning down the rhetoric. I don't see anybody really toning down the rhetoric until oil starts flowing.
Okay. And lastly, but not least, Terry.
Well, I think the ramifications are going to be there's not a presidential election for 4 years. And I think some of the positioning and the, you know, showboating that we've seen up to now is, you know, betting on the long shot that their party was actually going to be at the helm for 4 years. So this kind of paints a different picture. Will they get along better? Well, they're going to have some big decisions to make, namely on health care. I still haven't heard a lot on health care. And President Obama did give a press conference today. He didn't really drill down into anything. He said that he was open to new ideas, but I think you will see healthcare go forward, and the Parnell administration has sort of stonewalled on that. And whether he will have to walk that back and play nice and actually get serious about that, or if all the air will be sucked out of the room with oil taxes, you know, it just depends on what happens in January. It's so early in the game, but I think that's what the national ramifications will be.
Okay. Well, let's switch a little bit to the more local area and look at Juneau, because you segued a bit there by raising the question about what's happening in Juneau. There definitely was a change in the election with the election, so that the coalition, which had governed the Senate and had such a large impact, has seemingly drifted away. Andrew, what would you say the impact of that change, that particular change, will have on Alaska and the Valley?
Well, to hear other radio stations tell it, the talk radio
okay.
types, that this means full speed ahead for every kind of Republican idea. There's, you know, I think there's still room for people to slow up the process or even stall it. I mean, the way that the legislature is set up, we have a lot of power in those committees, and those guys have a lot of power over what bills get through and what bills don't. But I do think that we are going to see a lot more movement on these sort of big issues, you know, the ones that the ones that everybody's been talking about, the oil taxes. And every meeting I've been to recently, people have been predicting there's going to be movement on the bridge. So I guess that's yet to be seen.
Oh, okay. Zaz, do you have any opinion about that, the change with the coalition going away?
With the coalition going away, I think that it's pretty obvious that the issue to watch is oil taxes. There's also some question about abortion. There are a few members who have agreed to be part of the majority now who had stayed out because they weren't willing to address that. So I don't know if that indicates that that's on the table now. Oil taxes are the big one. We also have a Valley Senate president now. We have Charlie Huggins in charge of the Senate as president. That should be very interesting. I mean, I remember when Charlie first got the job of senator, there was a lot of talk about not only how many one-arm push-ups he can do, as Craig Medrid referenced, but he could do a lot of sit-ups. I think that man could do about 200 sit-ups. So maybe he could whip the Senate into shape.
Oh, okay. Well, and interesting that you bring up the fact that Senator Huggins is from the Valley, because we've had, in my lifetime, at least three Senate presidents, starting with Kurtula back in the day, and then, of course, with Senator Green, and now with Senator Huggins. And as someone has suggested to me, our little valley, even though we are fast-growing and are in the center of the universe, we still represent a small proportion of the population, and we seem to be fighting above our weight in some respects this way. Terry, any comments about the fact that through this election we saw no... Well, we did see a change in the representation going to Juneau, but we had a number of people returning without any real opposition or what appears to be token opposition, so that the Valley has pretty much a coordinated group going down there. Any comments about that?
Well, it would seem that for the people that are, you know, elected even on a local basis, that would bid well because there would be less haggling about special projects. But I think we should keep in mind there was a big road bond, transportation bond passed locally too. And even though there's been a lot of talk about federal money being cut off, which that will depend upon how the Obama administration moves forward, there's still a lot of projects in the pike. As Andrew said, you know, the big ones will be concentrated on, but they've solved some of those peripheral issues just by passing that transportation bond. But I think also you will see some things. Zaz brought up a couple of really good ones, but education. You know, you have a core of mostly Valley senators that have gone down there promising that they want to get vouchers in schools. And school funding is a key element, especially to our borough. It's a huge part of our budget. And the sentiment from Mr. Dunleavy, who replaced Ms. Menard, who was more mainline, streamline in the middle of that issue, has been ran on that type of a platform. So that, I think, will be key. But, you know, it's a two-year session. So the first year is a lot of posturing and putting things on the table, so to speak. And, you know, the advocates will change. Senator Davis is not there anymore. She was a big education advocate. So I think we're going to see a whole big flip-flop in education. We'll have to see where that goes.
Well, I can't help but bring up the other person from the school board, the local school board, who ran. Michael Dunleavy was elected without opposition once he passed through the primary, and he's off to Juneau, it appears. But we also have Lynn Gaddis, a sitting school board member who was elected to go to Juneau, and so far doesn't seem to have given any indication about leaving her seat on the school board. Any comment about that?
Well, I went to the school board meeting on Wednesday, and she was pretty much asked that directly, and she has given no indication. She, you know, reminds people that she won't be sworn in until mid-January. So she doesn't make any indication. That is legal in the mm-hmm. state to hold both seats, whether it's prudent to do it, especially for a freshman sitting House member, remains to be seen. But she has not given up so far what other than to keep both of those offices. So we'll see.
Okay. Andrew, any comments about that?
I really haven't gotten around to asking her directly.
Okay. I left her a message this morning.
Oh, did you?
Okay.
I haven't heard back yet.
Okay, so we're hoping that in the near future we'll have a follow-up that. That's an interesting situation. Well, the other thing about Juno is that Juno usually receives various lists of legislative requests, priorities from local government. It'll be the city of Palmer. It'll be the borough. What, if anything, do you see as changing in the relationship and the ability, for example, of the state to respond positively to these requests for money to do various things locally? How about Zaz? You want to start with that?
I don't know if I can speak very intelligently to that question, but we do have Bill Stoltz now as co-chair of finance. On the House side, mm-hmm. and that's a very powerful position for someone who represents at least part of the Valley to be in, and Bill certainly knows the lay of the land up here. Maybe I think I'll defer to everybody else in terms of, it would seem as if having a number of experienced Valley legislators, Charlie Huggins, the Senate President, Bill Stoltz, co-chair of Finance, it can only help for the borough, mm-hmm. especially,
yeah,
and the
sure.
cities too.
Okay, Andrew, anything to add to that?
The Valley did pretty well last year, as I recall.
Yes.
It was a banner year, I think, on this end of the Valley, maybe more than the other. But I kind of see that as being one of the main tasks when they're sent down there, you know. We all watch the budget. We all watch to see what's in there. I can't imagine that if there's money there to be spent, that it won't be.
Sure.
I mean, because that is one of the main things they go down there for.
Right, and right now what we appear to see is a continuing high price for oil, so the numbers are up, and I'm not aware of any prediction that says the available monies next year will be much lower. We still have to see what the effect of any proposed legislation on changing oil taxes will have in the immediate future. I mean, in the long term, there's a suggestion, as I understand the argument, correct me if I'm wrong, that by reducing the amount of taxes that are paid by oil companies, there will be ultimately an increase in the amount of money that will flow to the state. But I have not seen anything that suggests that will happen immediately. And so there are some budget implications if somewhere in that intermediate place there's a reduction in the amount of money that's available. So we still have to see what's going to happen with all of that to make that happen. So one of the other things that we've been looking at is the implications, and we'll switch a bit away from elections now, to repairs and the role that the local governments will take as far as helping people recover from the recent flooding. You know, that was big news, covered heavily, right in the center of attention. But in comparison to the East Coast, which suffered arguably a much wider devastation and where you can see pictures continuing, I haven't seen many pictures lately about the flood effects here in the Valley. So I'm wondering if it has dropped away. I know that those people who have been affected are very much interested in recovery, some homes and other things to be fixed, roadways and so on. Any information at all about monies that would be coming from the state or the federal government to help in that?
Well, as far as I know, they still have not gotten a federal disaster declaration. So what money they're dependent upon at this point would be from the state. And they have asked, the Assembly did allude to asking what had been spent up to this point. There was a little tussle at the last Assembly meeting about a reserve account. Mr. Keough felt that there should be a substantial increase in the zero amount that we have for emergencies. And part of his reasoning was that the borough spent $250,000 in the first few days of the flood here locally. But, you know, we have sort of the attention span of a gnat these days. So out of until the crisis is back in front of us. But it will be interesting to see what that whole, by comparison, flood on the East Coast will do to the federal declaration here. Because, you know, if that's a new avenue to get money, there's no earmarks, and now it's all disaster money. There's a lot of disasters. And we had the driest summer, in the history of, our country. And there's going to be a lot of needs. And you're seeing several governors of states step up about climate change now and what that ramification will be. And, we have Arctic ice that's melting. Will that discussion get put on the table? So everybody, I think, maybe they're not saying it out loud, but I think that a lot of people are thinking this is what's going to happen. We're going to start having more of these incidents. And are we ready, and do we have enough money for it? And if we don't, what share do we get of that in comparison to what everybody else is suffering through with their own natural disasters?
Okay, nice summary. Well, one of the things that I'd hoped to do in this show is to look a little bit ahead. We've just looked back at the election. And we have some implications that seem obvious, but there are some other things that are going to play out. And I'm curious what each one of you is thinking as this is November. We're not even to Thanksgiving yet. Got a few more months, and then we hit the depths of winter. But what do you expect to see from what you know, having watched all of the scene, to develop in this holiday season? What looking out there, do you have any hints or sense of any topics that are going to be big before we turn over into 2013? So think about that a moment. I understand this is a hard thing, because very often we have events occur, they pop up, and then they lead to it's a little bit like the flooding that occurred 2 weeks before. I'm sure there was nobody around that was saying, well, we're about to have a pretty big flood here, and this is going to draw all of our attention. And it started raining, and to my view, it looked like it was a simple rain, and then it kept raining. And then almost before I knew it, I was seeing flooding of substantial nature. But it was also kind of episodic. It happened in certain places, and a little bit like the flooding on the East Coast. Flooding was happening on the East Coast, but while reporting about it, we were sitting here under sunny skies. And that's the kind of thing that we experience. Sometimes we're just not quite aware. We just have to be ready for anything. But are there some predictable events that you would say are likely to receive considerable attention as we go into the rest of 2012?
I have one very simple topic that I've been thinking about lately. I'm sure the other two participants today will be much more profound, but snow has been on my mind. We live near Hatcher Pass on Palmer Fishhook, not far from Turner's Corner, and we got maybe an inch with this today's snowfall. The mountains hardly have any snow. I was getting my tires changed over in Wasilla, and a guy came in and said he had a tire that a bear bit. So the bears are still out, It's where we're in November now.
Whoa.
Almost mid-November. So on a very, I don't know if it's superficial level, but it sure is late in coming. And the one issue that I am kind of wondering about and keeping track of very loosely is the motorized access in Hatcher Pass, the motorized corridor to Hatcher Pass that I think is starting to come up again. I'm not sure if it's coming up before the assembly regularly now, or it's just been talked about.
Yeah, Terry's got a little bit more information about that. Terry, do you want to throw in on that?
It hasn't come up recently, but it will be coming up very soon. And I think you will hear a lot of, there's a lot of discussion going on about that. And everybody is, we are dependent in those areas. Having lived in Big Lake, snow is a huge amount of the economy. The flood, ramifications, everything, I look at, the ground is all very, very frozen. And as someone who lived on a lake for a long time, the lakes are high. When the ice goes out, that takes docks out. So a lot of these things are a reaction down the way. But I, too, was in Wasilla today, and it was interesting hearing people talk about the lack of fresh game that they were able to find this year because of the high snow last year and the amount of snow that took a lot of moose out. And it was just a conversation that I heard, and people saying the fish. And we know that that is one thing that the Assembly is has talked about recently at length, about the fisheries and what dire straits we are in. We have a lot of people that live out here that supplement their, you know, shopping with, you know, fresh meat and fish. And we could see a ramification of that. You know, more people not having places to live. There's a less than 2% occupancy rate in Anchorage. And so that means people will move out here, and the cost of transportation is getting higher. So I think you could see some, you know, social needs higher than we've seen in the past, just because of those type of things, those events.
Okay, so we've moved from snow and the weather, which is, it does dramatically affect everything from the economy to the pleasure that we have as we go out there. And last year was an extraordinary year. There was just snow. Started early, stayed on the ground, and everybody from the people running snow plows to the people operating B&Bs and going skiing and all the rest were very happy. But this year, it's the sound of silence as far as snow is concerned. But you do bring up, Terry, that very important topic that involves the problem with homeless youth and homeless throughout the valley. Andrew, you've covered a little bit of that. What's your sense of progress being made on that issue?
There's been progress on sort of the already existing kind of nonprofits. You know, the one I did most recently was about Family Promise Metsu, and they've got this bigger facility now that they can house more people in. But Family Promise was established. You know, they've been doing that for years.
Right.
And Family Promise is also kind of one of the main sort of success stories when you talk about homelessness. You know, there's just no options out here. You know, they, teenagers, single people, pretty much the only people who have a place that they can go to is the folks that Family Promise serves, and those are families with children. I have seen some progress. The team working on the youth shelter has been a whole lot of enthusiasm, and it seems to be enthusiasm that's been well applied.
Okay.
You know, it's not like a whole lot of enthusiasm that goes nowhere. I mean, they do seem to be making big steps towards something, but it's still unclear what that something is and what makes sense for the valley. And, you know, meanwhile, we've got kids living in their cars in Walmart. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's where the sense of urgency comes from, these volunteers trying to put this thing together. But on the other side, there are folks who've been working on this for a while, urging caution, you know, trying to sort of hold them back just to make sure that they don't implement it in the wrong way. So I think that's kind of where we are now, and it hasn't quite come to a head yet. But when it does, I think it's going to come to a head with a shelter, with something permanent.
Okay, all right. And putting a lot of this energy and money and all the rest into good planning so that it's something that's sustained becomes the whole trick.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Terry,
go ahead.
A friend of mine I met her for coffee here in Palmer a few days ago, and she passes the Kremlin, you know, the empty building, on a regular basis, and she asked if there's any way that could be used as some kind of a teen homeless shelter. And is that Melody Wright, who's a co-founder of the Palmer Post with me? I mean, she is a doer. I was just sort of speculating about starting a news blog a few years ago. It was Melody who said, well, let's just do it. We're just going to do it. And so what Melody just wants to do is to use the Kremlin for a kind of a no-questions-asked teen shelter. So, Andrew, if you can start working on that story. but, you know, there are so many teens in the valley who are, you know, couch surfing, sleeping in their cars, going to school, raising kids sometimes. A lot of those kids aren't in the social system. They aren't in foster care. You know, they aren't, there's not a paper trail behind them. And so it's more difficult for those kids to get help. And so her suggestion was just, you sign at the door, you got a bed, there's a building's already there. So maybe that, from Melody's mouth to the
streets of Palmer.
Yeah.
Streets of Palmer, okay. All right. Well, what we've talked about is a very specific example of people that are a little bit out of the system. The background is, of course, the state of the economy in the Valley. Neil Fried, we've mentioned in the past, has when he has spoken to groups, has very clearly pointed out that Alaska, and particularly the Valley, has done very well, comparatively speaking, to some parts of Alaska and even some parts of the country, certainly. How does that translate into a widespread economic development that allows people to both work and live in the Valley and not have to spend their time at two or even three jobs at entry-level wages? Earlier today, I was speaking with somebody who had lived for a while in Paradise on Maui. I lived there for a while with her husband, but both of them were working multiple jobs, and they didn't have any time. And no matter being in a nice place, if most of your focus is on just getting enough money to take care of the basics, that's a difficulty. And in the Valley, we have opportunities and of all kinds. There are a lot of people that live here, work on the slope, for example, and have reasonably high-paying jobs. We also have a lot of people that are in service industries and entry-level jobs. And as a supplement, that's one thing, but as a way to provide your major source of income, it's not so much fun. Any comments about that in terms of the rest of the year here as far as the economy? Terry.
Well, I think you may see a little bit of an upswing in different jobs, just primarily, you know, the voters passed a $215 million school bond a year ago, and it's been this year kind of getting it all drawn out, and they're getting ready to really do some construction on that. Plus, there was a road bond, and those construction jobs, even though they're not long-term jobs, I mean, like forever jobs, they do yield a lot more than a Walmart job. So I think that may see a little bit of an upswing in that right now. But, you know, it is a big problem. There's a third of our population is, you know, on the road every day going to Anchorage. And while we want to build these ways of getting them back and forth, maybe a little more effort in making them stay and shop and live in the Valley, whether the jobs are here instead of somewhere else to commute, might be sort of a better long-term fix to those things. I think what we forget is those 30,000, you know, or so people that go, oftentimes they shop in Anchorage too, and they buy their gas, and that affects all the small business owners here. So providing some type of a workplace for people can, you know, make a livable job and have some extra income to spend it here in the Valley. Certainly, you know, we would hope that is a long-term goal of people. And maybe we will be hearing more about that as we go down the path this year. But I think there are some projects that will stimulate us in the short term that are, you know, rolling off the plans now. And I think that, you know, this school has leveled off. Their enrollment is pretty steady right now, but that could change with, you know, some people coming to the Valley, and usually construction workers or a younger sort, and have children. And so we'll see. We could be in for some surprises by the end of the year, just, you know, based on that activity.
Okay, Zaz, any other comments?
Well, I've heard that Corrections is hiring about 300 people up here.
That's true.
Yeah, at Sutton and out at out at Point Mac, and that if the rail spur gets going again, that's what, 200 jobs? And again, they're not permanent jobs, but it's a lot of money for, you know, even what, a year or so. You can, if you're lucky, you could put a lot into savings on that. There was one more area that I'd heard. There was some, well, if things start loosening up on the slope, that could also, I can't remember what percent of our population. It's not 30%, but it's a significant population. Right. Is working up on the slope.
Yeah. So if there are increasing number of jobs on the slope, many people choose to live here in the Valley because it's a good commute.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew?
Yeah. You know, we talk about it a lot in the newsroom. That it's one of the most quoted sort of facts about the Valley, that Arctic Slope Regional Corporation is one of our biggest employers, and they don't have an office out here.
Right.
So certainly what happens on the slope affects what happens here. And then all these things that are, you know, the construction jobs and the prison jobs particularly seem to me to be the type that will stimulate other parts of the economy. Folks are a lot more folks going to be wanting to live down Kinnickus Bay if they're going to have to work at that prison, which is way at the end, you know. And there's a lot of houses down there, but you know, maybe there needs to be a few more to serve them. Yeah, and then they talk about Goose Creek as creating things like convenience stores and small hotels and such for visiting families.
Or maybe even an entire community that will act as a focus rather than being an extension from Wasilla.
And that's obviously like super long term.
Sure.
But they talk about Goose Creek as being this prison that folks can come to visit. You know, like they couldn't have made a trip from Kotzebue to Colorado, but they could to Goose Creek.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time. We have just a scant minute here. So let me go around and see if there are any last comments, starting with Terry. Terry.
Well, I think we covered a lot of ground today. Of course, I think everybody's sort of in a post-election fog that have been paying attention. I'm just running into people all week that, you know, have to say a little bit about it, but they're sort of fatigued out about it. So I think next week we'll have a little better bearing. We'll all be more of ourselves that pay attention to this sort of thing, and maybe we'll have a few more ideas on what the long term is going to be, or at least the immediate short term, and have some questions answered, like if we're going to have a school board member that's going to sit on two seats, and a lot of other things that we've talked about tonight.
Okay, Zaz?
I think that, I'm still in election mode personally. I think it's really, it'll be interesting to see what happens in this coming session given the number of Valley legislators. On finance alone, we've got two. We've got Stoltz, and Mark Newman is now on the finance committee. It'll be really interesting to see. Maybe we're turning into a well-represented resource colony. I don't know, but it'll be really interesting to see. And the other thing I wanted to add about jobs is coal is a big question mark, too. If any of those big projects get going, a lot of jobs in there. Obviously, a lot of controversy.
I'm glad you brought that up. How did we miss that? Andrew?
Yeah, I'm just kind of taking it day by day at this point.
Okay.
Waiting to see how it all goes, I guess.
Right, and you get to cover a lot of different things. And
just about everything, yeah.
Yeah, make that happen. Well, thank you all for being here, and we'll be back next week to talk about things that are important as we have Valley Edition number 3.
If you have any questions or comments about Valley Edition, email us at manager@radiofreepalmer.org. Valley Edition is a production of KVRF. The views and opinions are those of the host and guest and do not necessarily represent those of KVRF or its underwriters.